Good morning. How are you?
Oh, terrific. Terrific. The weather's cooled, calmed down a little bit. I hope it stays that way. It's been high humidity here in the 90s, so I'm not sure which is worse, the West Coast over 100 degrees or on the East Coast with 90 plus high humidity. I'm not sure. Haven't figured that one out yet. But today is pretty nice, pretty nice.
How about you go for a visit and see?
So what now?
I said, how about you go for a visit and see which one you like best?
No, I'll stay here for a while.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. I'll stay here for a while. And you got a special guest this morning?
I do. One of your favorite.
Yes.
Yes. Dr. Koye Oyurende. I'm so glad he agreed to be on the show because you've been overworking the man with interviews lately. I knew you would. I'm like, when I get somebody that he really likes, he does not know how to let go, but he graciously agreed to come back and be a guest on the show. So we've been working the man hard. You do know he's a doctor, right?
I do.
He has things to do.
Yeah. But he also has a lot to say.
He does. Okay. He has so much to say. That's why I wanted him back to talk about his book, Who Should We Let Die? I love the title, and I love what it means, because me personally, when it came to the pandemic, I truly got the impression that they decided certain people were acceptable losses. And it irritated me. Well, no, it didn't irritate me. It made me really mad. Let's just put it that way. I can't say the word that I would, that I was initially thinking, because this is a Christian show. And I do sometimes think bad thoughts, folks. So I'm just like you. But yeah, it really, really irritated me.
Oh my goodness.
The way that they chose, you know, to let the elderly, certain, racial and ethnic groups, they chose, in my opinion, to let those people die. And I think their strategy kind of backfired on them, because those people doing the loudest talking ended up, you know, okay, fine, don't wear your mask. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of them ended up in the grave right alongside everybody else. But yeah, so we're going to talk about Who Should We Let Die? And his book isn't just about, you know, the pandemic. It's about, the medical, system in America in general. And I can't wait to talk to him about it. So anyway, I bet when we're done talking, you're going to mess with the man again about talking about it on the Boomerang Show.
Well,
I know
you. I do have the doctor's number.
I know. You have his number. You have Earl Mitchell's number. I bet Earl Mitchell be like, bro, I'm going to get paid in a minute. he's been on a bunch too. But yeah, I'm just glad that we've been blessed with such awesome, awesome guests. You remember when we first started this back in 2016, I didn't know what we were going to do. I'm like, Lord, what? And he just keeps supplying the guests. He keeps bringing the work.
It's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Yeah. Yep. So I'm going to step aside, you know, and let's see, you have a little time left. So I'm going to step aside. Okay.
He said a little. I can't deal with you now.
Bye.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Ann Wooten Taylor, and this is the Eating as an Act of Worship Ministries radio show. Eating as an Act of Worship Ministries is a nonprofit organization. We teach the biblical principles about the body, dieting, exercising, and maintaining a healthy body for the glory of God. We do that through our 12-week health and fitness course, which is coming up next month. So if you have not signed up, you need to get signed up. The spaces are filling up, and you don't want to miss your spot. Just go to our website at www.eatingasanactofworshipministries.org. It'll be online only via Zoom, and the class is free. I'll say it again, it's free. There are no registration fees or membership fees. Only thing you're responsible for is the cost of your workbook, which you can get online at Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. For those of you who joined us last week at New Life Christian Fellowship Church, I want to say thank you. We had a less time in the Lord. I want to say thanks to Pastor Simmons for listening to the Holy Spirit to choose me to be the speaker last Sunday morning. It wasn't my first time there. They have a series every year called She Said Yes. And I've been one of the people that they choose to bring the Sunday morning message during that time. Oh, at least three times. Yeah, I've been a speaker at least three times. And then we've had our classes there. So they've hosted the 12-week health and fitness course at their church too. So we thank God for New Life Christian Fellowship Church and our relationship with them. And we pray that they were blessed by the word last week. For those of you, again, who can't take the class, I want you to know that you don't have to necessarily take the 12-week course if you can't make it on Monday nights starting June 21st at 6 o'clock p.m. Central Time. What you can do instead is purchase the workbook and then get the teacher's edition, the Eating as an Act of Worship teacher's edition. Those two books together will allow you to have your own class with your family, with your friends, with your church, your book club, or a private study right in your own home. So you got options, people. and no excuses. Lord's taking away all your excuses. Get started today, all right? Or at least register today, okay? Now it's time for your weekly motivation. For those of you who listen every week, you know our motivation is designed to encourage you to stay the course if you've been doing well on your health and fitness journey, to inspire you to get up and try again if you've fallen down somewhere along the way. And if you haven't been able to find a reason to get motivated to take charge of your health and fitness on your own, we want to motivate you today through Jesus Christ. So today's motivation is entitled, Stop Playing Mind Games. You've probably heard a lot about mindfulness in regard to health and fitness. The general idea is that you'll become healthier and more fit by being aware of what you consume. Logically, it seems to make sense. So why is it that people are still largely unhealthy and unfit? Well, we've all heard the saying mind over matter on more than one occasion. Consequently, people use different strategies to mentally prepare for a given task. For instance, some celebrities admit they employ an alter ego technique to get over stage fright. Other people give themselves pep talks to reinforce the belief that they can accomplish a goal. Then there are those who use meditation or other relaxation techniques prior to undertaking an important assignment. People psych themselves out to eat right and exercise too. Some rely on other people. For example, making a commitment to be a workout buddy gives a person a feeling of responsibility and accountability. Others join weight loss programs because they need a structured environment to succeed. Some people even hire personal trainers to keep them motivated and to push them in ways they can't push themselves. We use these and other strategies for many reasons. On the one hand, it's hard to make yourself exercise and even eat right. Likewise, it's difficult to find the time to prepare meals for yourself and your family for the whole week. And honestly, the last thing you want to do after a long day is cook when it's so much easier to place an order to be picked up on your way home from work. It's not that your body can't stand the discomfort associated with the workout. It's not that your teeth aren't capable of chewing vegetables, legumes, or baked fish. On the contrary, you can not only swallow eggplant, but your body can also digest it. The problem is that you don't want to do it, even though you know intellectually it's what's best for you. As you've learned from previous experience, the mental tricks only work for so long. Until you truly change your mind, none of the mind games will work long term. A made-up mind is a determined one that won't be changed because of a little physical discomfort due to a workout or the inconvenience of having to alter your lifestyle in order to conform to a health and fitness plan. It's a permanent change because it's a part of who you are. It's also much easier to do when it's a gift from God instead of the result of a daily internal war between your cravings and your feeble will. If you're willing to submit to God's will to eat and drink for his glory, then he'll give you the gift of grace to be changed from the inside out by renewing your mind. So let's be the ones to stop playing mind games today and let God permanently change your health and fitness mindset through Christ. Do that by taking the first step. Register today for the Eating as an Act of Worship Ministries Health and Fitness course. Classes begin on August 21st, 2023 at 6 o'clock p.m. via Zoom. The space is limited, so register now at eatingasanactofworshipministries.org. Then purchase your copies of the Eating as an Act of Worship workbook and the Eating as an Act of Worship Teacher's Edition online at Amazon or barnesandnoble.com. The classes and books will teach you the biblical principles about the body, dieting, exercising, and maintaining a healthy body for the glory of God. Don't forget to read our weekly blog for motivation to stay healthy and fit through Christ. Follow us daily on Facebook, Threads, Twitter, and Pinterest for recipes and diet and exercise tips. And tune in to our syndicated radio show on iTunes, Spotify, the DFW Den radio station, Studio W Buzz, and Victory KVDW 100.9 FM, 95.3 FM, and 1530 AM in Little Rock, Arkansas for interviews and health and fitness trends. Lastly, please make a tax-deductible donation to Eating as an Act of Worship Ministries at www.eatingasanactofworshipministries.org. On our homepage in the upper right-hand corner, you will see a tab that says Donate. Just click on it, and we accept donations of every size, and we thank you in advance for your generosity. All right, everybody, that was your motivation for today. We hope and pray it encouraged you to stay the course. If you've been doing well on your health and fitness journey, that it inspired you to get up and try again if you've fallen down somewhere along the way, and that it motivated you to get healthy and fit through Christ. All right, we got a great show lined up for you today. As I said, we've got Dr. Koye Oyarende with us. He's been with us before. You guys may recall that he was a guest earlier in the year. I guess it was around February because he and I collaborated on the book before. But Dr. Oyarende is a pediatrician, an author, and a public health expert. He trained in Nigeria, South Africa, and the United States. Before returning to clinical practice, he was a professor at the Mailman School of Public Health, Columbia University, New York. His main areas of service and scholarship are pediatrics, vaccination policy, and health systems strengthening, especially for quality maternal, newborn, and child health services. Dr. Oyarende authored a well-received memoir titled Who Should We Let Die? He's also a co-author, along with myself, of the Love Manifesto Anthology. Welcome to the show, my friend. How are you today?
Thank you very much. I am fine. How about you?
I'm doing well. It's good to have you back. I hope we're not overworking you too much on Studio W Buzz.
No, not at all. I'm happy to be here.
Good. Well, you know, you and I had the pleasure of talking earlier when you were on the show back in February about the Love Manifesto Anthology. And we mentioned that you yourself have written a book, and it sounds a lot like it's about your experiences in the medical profession. Can you, you know, give us a little bit more background about how you came to become a pediatrician and, you know, deal with public health policy?
Well, let me just start by saying that, you know, I was born and raised in Nigeria, and one of my earliest experiences was being a very sickly child. And that was because of malaria. Yeah. I just could not develop the kinds of immunity that everybody else developed. And about every 6 to 8 weeks, I was down with malaria again.
Wow.
And I would, and thankfully I had parents who were very alert to my needs. And they enrolled me and my brother in some growth monitoring trial, worldwide trial, many countries, multiple sites. And the trial was to kind of measure growth of children around the world. And so that connected me well to a health system. And they got me in every time I was sick. I was one of the priority kids they saw because I was part of that trial.
Right.
And And then they came to pick us up from home every month, because they had to go back there and get measured. They collected specimens from us. They measured our height, our weight, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we left there, they gave us Smarties. Smarties are like M&M's.
Oh, wow. Did they taste like M&M's too?
Yes. So
awesome.
So as kids, it was fun thing to go there, and then you saw all these doctors in their white coats, mm-hmm. and they were very friendly, and it was just a very happy environment. You wouldn't even think you were in a hospital.
Wow. Wow. So, well, that's, I'm glad that they made it that way for you, because kids around here, when you take them to the hospital, will scream bloody murder just when you pull up to the building.
Right. And so from then on, it was like, I like to be like these guys. I want to work there one day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that got me interested in medicine very early in life. Mm-hmm. And one of the benefits of no longer being in Nigeria is that I no longer have malaria.
Wow, that's a blessing. So they've wiped it out completely?
No, they still have it there, but I live in the States now. So
I'm not
exposed to malaria anymore.
Okay.
And I'm looking forward to the day when we'll have some vaccine or treatment that really works.
Exactly.
Long term, so I can go back home.
Because it's not working. When you're there, I think God ordered your steps. I mean, if you know, you were born there, but at the same time, we're benefiting from your gifts and your skills and knowledge and expertise. And I know people in Nigeria could use your help too, but I think you're planted here for a reason, and I'm glad you're with us. So after that, how long did it take you to finish your training? Because you've trained in three different countries. It seems like you went to school for a long time.
Very long. Maybe too long.
Tell us about those experiences.
Well, medical school was 7 years.
Mm, yeah.
And then I went on to do some work. Well, very early on, I realized in medical school, I liked health policy.
Uh-huh.
Most other students in my class felt health policy was bad. It was too cheap, was uninteresting, was boring. So they focused on more interesting things like surgery,
mm-hmm.
neurosurgery, OBGYN, and things like that. But I was always attracted to health policy. And so at the end of my training, I worked for like 10 years doing what's called a general medical officer type work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went into further training in health policy.
Mm-hmm.
So my time in South Africa, I was spent training as an epidemiologist, which is essentially the bedrock of health policy,
mm.
where you learn how to observe patterns and
mm-hmm.
how disease affects us and how we can treat them and how we can prevent ill health. Yes.
I bet when the pandemic began, all your epidemiological senses were just tingling. Because nobody was listening to scientists. What could that have been like for you? Because I can only imagine, because as working as an attorney, I know what it's like to have clients do not take advice, who do not listen to you. And so to be a person with a medical degree and an epidemiologist and then have patients just ignore everything you say and listen to quacks and people who don't have so much as a high school diploma, let alone a degree in medicine, give them advice, it had to be frustrating.
It was extremely frustrating.
Yeah.
Particularly that I think the general public did not give doctors a break.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
So if you were to have a new disease that people knew very little about,
mm-hmm.
we knew it's like you knew the cousins of the disease, but you didn't mm-hmm. know the disease itself. So we're trying to figure out how the disease would behave based on what we knew about its cousins.
Right.
And so you might say, oh, put on a mask or don't put on a mask or whatever it is. So the instructions were changing as we knew better about the disease.
Right, right.
But the public would say, because you said last month that I should not put on a mask, now I don't believe you when you now say I should put on a mask. Well, I've known better than when I told you that. And this is changing every day. I mean, you remember when we had the mugs in New York, when we just exhausted the capacity of New York mugs. Mm-hmm. Now we had cold stores and cold vans taking care of bodies.
Right, right.
Well, we were learning as we were going along.
Exactly.
But the way the whole health industry and public health system got politicized, mm-hmm. made sure that, well, nobody listened to us anymore. Mm. And, you know, even as we were trying to learn, we were also trying to protect ourselves. And then we were seeing our own colleagues dropping down like flies.
Right.
And yet the public that wasn't listening to us. Mm-mm. And you had a leader of the country who also just created all kinds of controversies around the whole
issue. Chaos. Just chaos.
Oh, it was chaotic. And it was really, really frustrating.
Yes. So I understand, you know, when it comes to Black people, let's just be honest, because we have definitely gotten the short end of the stick when it comes to healthcare, which is one of the things that you focus on, maternal healthcare, children, babies, the healthcare babies. And it's sad to say that in a developed country, especially in America, of all places, we have such poor maternal outcomes. But as a parent, it's also scary, no matter who you are, when there's something new out and you're giving it to your kid. Did you find, you know, it even more difficult once the vaccine was available for kids? That parents just still were really hard-headed about trying to get their kids vaccinated?
Oh, yes, that was also frustrating. I mean, I always tell them, well, when your car is bad, please don't talk to your chef.
Right, exactly. Exactly. What will he do? Cook it? I mean, come on.
Just go to your mechanic and listen to your mechanic.
Right, right.
Same thing. Look at what the pediatrician is doing to his own children.
Right, right.
So when you say, I have people say, oh, I'm going to do my own research. Well, how can you do your own research? Do you have the 30 plus years of experience I have in this narrow field of work?
Right.
No. So ask me, doc, what do you do to your own children? Did you ask your own children to get the vaccines?
Right.
That's how you know that I'm not going to let my own children just die.
Exactly.
I'm not planning to kill them. So when I'm saying you used to get the vaccine, it's because I know from years and years and years of study that on the balance, you're better off with the vaccine than without the vaccine.
Right. So tell us a little bit about the title, because I said at the beginning of the show, I felt like, and it angered me then, and it still angers me now, that leaders around the world decided, and I love it, there it is, who should we let die? If you're following us on StreamYard, you can see him holding up his book, Who Should We Let Die? I felt like there was a literal, you know, decision to sacrifice certain segments of the population to the disease. It just felt that way to me, and it still does. Which is why I have no sympathy, and still don't have any sympathy for them when they were complaining about the Great Resignation. Well, you just told all of the people, the older Americans who were in the workforce, that you don't really care about them. So they're either going to come to work and possibly get the disease and die, or they're going to take care of themselves. So I don't blame all of them for quitting. which basically left the labor shortage and gave the rest of the workforce the opportunity to be a bit more selective about where they were going to work and how much money they were going to make. Good for them, because I would want to take care of myself too. But then the people who were on the front lines having to work because they were in sectors of the economy that, you know, required you to work in the food industry, whether it's working in agricultural settings or working in food packaging or working in grocery stores, not to mention those working, you know, to get us the medical supplies, and whatnot that we needed. All those people who had to put themselves out there, then turned around blaming them, especially because they were very often black and brown people, for getting sick or for having underlying conditions. Did you, and I know this was after you'd already written your book, did you get the feeling that kind of decision was made about who should be allowed to die during the pandemic, or was it just me?
Well, so I began writing the book before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's the same concerns I had that got highlighted by the pandemic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That if you were to go to the emergency room and they treat you, because the country has a law called EMTALA that requires you to be treated by the hospitals when you come to the ER.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to the ER and let's say someone had diabetes,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and got there and said, oh, you need some insulin, blah, blah, blah. They give you your insulin, they give you everything you need and say, we're going to send the bill to your address or to, you know, so we can get our money back.
Right.
And they let you out of the door. Then they give you a prescription for insulin.
Mm.
Well, they've not asked you, where do you live? If you were homeless, where do you put your insulin
when
you
cannot get it? Exactly.
You need a refrigerator for insulin. So the homeless guy has no refrigerator. He can't afford to buy the prescription you gave to him. But then you sent him out and said bye.
And didn't care.
So exactly, care. When we treat people like that, we're saying we don't care if they go and die.
Right.
So that's the point of the title, that the way we have arranged our health system in the U.S. is that we don't really care if people die, because most of us who have health insurance have health insurance based on an employer.
Mm.
So what if you lose your job?
Right.
So now the your health coverage and that of your children is all based on this one job that you're doing with your employer.
Mm.
Now think of the pandemic and people who lost their jobs during the pandemic.
Right.
All of a sudden, you have three kids and one, a single mom, and then no insurance. Mm. How are you supposed to take care of your kids?
Exactly.
Now, in the U.S., the way we've arranged our health service, we've focused it more on a free market type economy,
mm-hmm,
where you have corporations taking charge.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the health insurance industry. Each of their CEOs are earning multi-million dollars a year.
Exactly.
Well, how do they have enough money to pay them so much? Because they're not selling anything. All they're getting is the subventions we pay for our health insurance.
And how is it that, you know, if I get Tylenol in the store, I can buy a whole bottle, you know, for $3-4, but when I go to the hospital, one pill will cost me that much. How is that even... Right. Even fair. Surely you buy these things in bulk and you get a discount.
Exactly.
So I shouldn't have to pay this much more for one pill, just because I had a hospital stay. I really do think we have one of the crappiest medical systems in the world. And you've had the, you know, the pleasure of being exposed to multiple systems. How does America's system compare with the systems of other countries? Who does it best? Who does it worse?
Well, of the leading economies in the world, I think America has the worst healthcare system.
Wow, that is sad.
There are some things good about our healthcare system. So at the end of life, when we need all kinds of high tech to support our health, the best place to be in the world is the US.
Wow.
Because the high tech is there to support our health. But if you are, and of course, if you are wealthy and have insurance and have all the resources, this is where you need to be, the US. Mm-hmm. But if you do not have that kind of money, and you're better off in systems that provide for your health care without you having to bring out cash. Mm-hmm. So it's only in the US, of all the wealthy countries in the world, it's only in the US that you might go bankrupt because somebody is sick.
Yep.
Oh, grandma has cancer, so we have to sell a house. Oh, Junior fell off a motorbike and broke his ankle. He had a couple of surgeries. Now we are in debt, $250,000. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That does not happen in Canada next door.
Wow.
Because the system, through taxes, has covered everybody's health care.
Wow.
You don't have to think when you're going to the hospital, how much is it going to cost me? Because the system has already paid for it, the taxes of all of us. So when I'm healthy and strong, I'm paying taxes, healthcare taxes.
Wow.
Take care of me when I'm no longer healthy and strong.
Exactly.
Yeah. So all the resources are pooled and invested and all that, but it's a non-profit system. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what is profiting from my illness?
Wow.
In the US, there are a whole slew of profiteers who are making money off our healthcare. So you have the health insurance industry. They will deny you services. Ask any doctor how many times they have to call to get something approved for their patient.
Wow.
In the end, they approve it. But they know next time you don't want to call because it's so much hassle to do the call. I mean, I spend an hour trying to reach them. Well, they have other patients waiting. So the chances are that next time you find something cheaper or not, just tell the patient, you know what, let's wait it out and see if they're going to get better.
Oh, wow. That is sad.
You don't want to go through that process of calling and wasting your time. So that's one. Then you have hospital corporations. I used to work in a place in North Dakota. I discovered it was owned by a hedge fund.
And you know they don't have any sense of how to take care of a patient if it's a hedge fund.
They don't care about the patient. They just want to make their bottom line. And I got the hospital manager talked to me and said, you know, if you have a patient with three different complaints, just take two.
Pick two
and let them come back for the third one.
What?
And I said, so if you have high blood pressure, headache, and back pain, which one do you want me to leave out of those?
Exactly.
They're not going to get better unless they address all the three at once.
Right.
But I said, you know, doctor, you see, you don't understand business. You don't understand. I said, well, I'm not a businessman. I'm a physician.
Exactly.
All I care about is the health and well-being of this patient in front of me. And I can't say because you got hedge funds to buy the practice that now I have to now be the one chasing your dollars.
Right.
So, of course, they weren't particularly happy with me.
Well, of course not, because you are actually a human being and not a bank, you know, hiding behind a bunch of investors.
Right.
And it's sad that we have such different healthcare systems, you know, just right across the border. I mean, to hear about people literally having to go to Canada from the United States to purchase insulin because they can't afford it here. I mean, people literally rationing out their own insulin and dying because, you know, they can't ration it out enough to keep themselves alive, and they can't afford to get more, and literally having to drive to another country to get it. That makes absolutely no sense to me. None whatsoever. And it makes me wonder, you know, because you talked about how much money people are making. Here in America, doctors can make really good money. And so it makes me wonder, how does that stack up against what doctors earn in places like Canada or South Africa or the UK? Is it not just that we charge people here an astronomically high amount for healthcare, but are we also, you know, skewing the payments, or the salaries that we give, not just, you know, to the people at the very top, like the CEOs or hedge fund companies that own the hospitals, and pharmaceutical companies, but are doctors making a lot of money too?
Not quite. I mean, doctors make enough. I think I'm not sure any doctor would say he's not comfortable, but it's hard to find a doctor that says, I made money, I'm so wealthy because I practiced medicine.
Wow.
Most of the time, the money doctors make is from doing other things. So let's say you do drug research, and you help find a new molecule for treating something. Well, you might make extra money there. And if you, because you get, you know, paid fairly well, you are able to manage your resources, invest properly, and then you get, you know, more comfortable over time. But, you know, first of all, the student loans that doctors take are hefty.
Right.
And then you come out, if you, okay, so there are some specialties that make a lot of money. Not pediatrics that I'm in, not family practice that many people do, not internal medicine, but so like ophthalmology, maybe dermatology, some of the other specialties make a lot of money. But by and large, it's not like Canadian doctors are running away from Canada and queuing up for work in the US.
Wow.
They make enough in their country in spite of the healthcare system that provides for all. So we can as well do that here and make the healthcare system available to all.
Exactly.
And the crux of my book is to say that health is a human right.
Yes.
Because you're a human being, you have a right to health. Nobody should deny us our healthcare just because we are poor, we are disabled, we are black, or we, you know, dad is a drug addict, or mom drinks too much alcohol. The kid shouldn't then suffer because of the ills of the parent, right?
Right, right.
The system should already provide for that kid's health care.
You know, you keep mentioning it. I was on the board of a nonprofit organization that focused on healthcare disparities in America. And of course, being a part of the organization and friends with its founders opened my eyes to a whole lot. And so then when the pandemic came, I think it opened everybody's eyes to the disparities and not just healthcare here in America, but even the differences in healthcare from the quote unquote wealthy nations versus the poorest nations. Can you address the healthcare disparities on those, you know, different levels?
Well, I mean, within the country, you have all kinds of historical or let's say legacy problems that affect healthcare access. So, for example, if you say healthcare is based on employment status, well, that means people like African Americans are more likely to be unemployed than Caucasian Americans.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that means many more of the unemployed people who do not have health insurance will be black people.
Mm.
If you look at the kinds of work that people do, so if you go to Wall Street, you can look at the racial disparities you find there.
Mm-hmm.
How many black people are CEOs of the top 500 companies?
Right.
How many women are CEOs there or executive suite level people? So when the pandemic came, you then have that a lot of the people who did the kinds of jobs that were called essential services.
Mm-hmm.
So like the Amazon delivery guy, the USPS mm-hmm. guy,
mm-hmm.
the people who cleaned our hospitals, the
right.
people who served our food in restaurants,
mm-hmm.
they are mostly black, immigrant, women, poor whites, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So the pandemic came, those who could afford moved to the Hamptons or moved to the suburbs.
Right.
They didn't have to see anybody. They had internet access. They could continue working
mm-hmm.
without seeing anybody, without touching anybody.
Right.
They would order their groceries, Instacart, Amazon delivered food.
Whatever. Exactly.
So they were a bit protected from the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And then when vaccines are available, they were the first in line to get it, even though they were living in their cozy suburbs.
Right.
They still were the first to get it. We even had people, even when the government had, had a scheme to make it more equitable.
They were jumping line.
People were jumping the line. People were lying and just making up stories to get in front of everybody else.
Right, right.
So that's in the U.S. Now, if you look at the global picture, a lot of the countries in Africa, for example, were mm-hmm. struggling really hard to get vaccines for their population.
Mm-hmm.
And you find that the U.S. went around the world kind of bullying everybody.
Wow, really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Said, well, we're going to buy up all the respirators available.
Mm.
Well, the life of a child of a mother in Africa, in Namibia or South Africa,
just as important.
Is as important as the life of an American.
Exactly.
So when we then go and say, okay, Pfizer, all your vaccines, we want it all for the U.S.
Mm.
And the Canadians bought like three times what they needed for their economy, just in case they had to vaccinate the second time. So they kind of just bought even what they didn't need.
Mm.
Well, and these vaccines had had expiry dates.
Exactly.
So now they bought them even when they didn't need them. So when they were about to expire, they were going to dump them in Africa.
Wow.
We are dumping them, so you're getting the vaccine into the country in tons, but they have only 2 weeks to use them.
Oh my gosh. I didn't know it was that bad. I knew it was bad, but I didn't realize it was that bad. Wow.
Yeah, not bad. And then you have countries where they ended up being like the waste basket for vaccines, because vaccines arrived 3 days, 4 days, 1 week, 2 weeks before they're expiring. How are we going to distribute it over the whole entire country?
Exactly, in that short period of time. And you That's can't even do it. Wow.
And and even though there are all kinds of facilities like Convax that were set up to help organize a more equitable distribution of vaccines around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But, the things like that need a lot of funding. And a lot of understanding that all lives are valued the same.
Exactly.
One of the things I have also in my book is talking about things like we want to wear, the $12 shirt that you buy at Walmart, but you can get that $12 shirt because it's made by a kid in Bangladesh.
Mm.
Well, that kid should be in school.
Exactly.
That kid should have healthcare in his own country.
Yes.
His environment should be protected from the dyes and lint that the textile industry throw in the rivers and sidewalks.
Exactly.
And so I think our entire world will get better when we understand that the life of that kid in Bangladesh and the life of my own kids in the U.S. are one and the same.
Yes.
He's not better. My kids are not better than their kids.
Amen.
And they're all God's children.
Amen.
And we should care for them equally.
So do you think there's hope? I mean, because we are, as you pointed out, a capitalist society. We like to make our money, which, I mean, is evidenced by the fact that you have the, I forget the name of the company that was producing the EpiPens, but I have a child who, you know, had severe allergic reactions from the time he was about 2 years old. And then for them to say, oh, we're now going to charge $500 for an EpiPen and give the CEO a major salary increase. Are you kidding me? To me, and I've said this a bunch of times in the Eating as an Act of Worship Ministries Health and Fitness course, it seems like our health is being held hostage, and whoever can pay is the one that gets to live, at least for a little while longer, because it's not like it's a one-time thing. You're being extorted over and over and over again in order to take care of yourself. You know, it costs you more to buy organic foods. It costs you, you know, to be able to work out and exercise. It just costs, period, in order to take care of yourself in a system that seems to be designed to cripple you in a way that allows you to limp through life just so that they continue to make money.
Yes. So one of the things I said in my book is that there are two faulty health systems. Mm-hmm. One is the one we have in the U.S., which I call the GoFundMe health system.
GoFundMe. I love it.
Yeah. Because if you go to the reports of the GoFundMe website, mm-hmm. and they list the, you know, they ranked what people are asking for money for on their website.
A lot of it is healthcare.
So people are panhandling just to pay for their healthcare, so they don't lose their home, so they can afford to send Junior to school with a long lunch pack, so they have to panhandle to pay for grandma's healthcare.
And to bury the person when they die. That's sad.
So that's what the U.S. is doing, this GoFundMe mm-hmm. thing. On the other hand, what you have in my own country, Nigeria, and the countries like that, I call it the cash and carry health system. Because if I had an appendicitis that needs to be fixed, mm-hmm. and you get to the clinic or the hospital and say, my belly hurts, they examine you, they say, oh, you have an appendicitis, it's going to cost you $100,000, now put the deposit of $20,000 down.
Wow.
Or we're not going to touch you.
Wow.
Okay, so who keeps money at home waiting for healthcare, for a healthcare emergency?
So they just let you die?
Well, they say, well, sorry, go to the government hospital.
Wow.
And when you get to the government hospital, the government says, here's a list of things you have to go and buy.
Buy?
Well, because the hospital doesn't, the government did not provide it, so we need antiseptic to clean your belly, the iodine thing to clean your belly with.
When you're sick, you have to go and make these purchases?
Yep. We now have to suture you up when you do that, so we need all those sutures and, you know, things like that, and IV fluids, things like that.
So where do you go? I'm curious at this point. Where do you go to? Because I don't know where to go to purchase something like that. I thought you had to have a license to get that kind of stuff.
Oh, so they give you a list of things to buy and point you to the places where you're going to get them.
Wow.
And then imagine you live alone, and your belly is hurting, and you get there and they give you a list. What are you going to do with the list? You can't even walk. You can't even get back onto the street. Now you have to wait on somebody calling somebody and somebody raising money, all that, before you are able to afford your health care.
Oh my God.
Now you can think of the amount of delay that might set in. And some of these things require prompt attention.
Yes.
But then you are delayed for like 3, 4, 5, 6 hours trying to find a relative that will come and somebody that's going to put some money down, maybe take a loan out so they can take care of you.
Wow.
And if the delay is too long, they do all that and then the person dies.
Oh my gosh. That is so scary. I can't imagine going to a hospital, first of all, being turned away because you can't pay it all, right? Or a good percentage of it right then and there. And then going to another hospital that'll take you only if you buy what's needed for me to provide the care. That, oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So that's the experience in many developing countries where the WHO, the World Health Organization, is leading others in the world to say, we have to recognize health as a human right.
Yes.
We have to provide for the care, for what people need for their health care.
Right.
So that they don't have to go shop around when they're ill. They don't have to need someone to help them go and buy, you know, IV fluids.
Right. That is crazy.
You know, you have an accident and you need blood transfusion. Now you have to go and get somebody to donate the blood.
And that's the thing. How do you do that if you're unconscious?
Exactly. That's the question. So you have people who literally die because there's nobody to help them because they're unconscious. Nobody knows who they are. So who are you going to call?
Wow.
So they're arriving, maybe some traffic accident, and the ambulance brings them, or the police brings them down. Okay, what are we going to do? Here's a list of things to buy. Well, who are you going to give it to? Mm. There's nobody to give it to. If I give it to the policeman, because he's off back on the streets doing his patrol. So now you have this sick person there, unconscious, and you're trying to figure out, how do you pay for that health care?
I couldn't imagine being a doctor under those circumstances. How do you suppress just the human response to help somebody in need? It just, I guess if you don't have what you need to help them, that makes it a lot easier to do. But, my gosh, it just seems inhumane in so many ways. And at the same time, I can see how the people are stuck between a rock and a hard place.
It's one of those considerations that got me out of working in Nigeria, because I just could not handle it. That how do you continue this kind of service? I wasn't interested in owning a practice. As a commercial end of medicine wasn't my interest. Mm-hmm. My interest was in service to people, and I didn't see, you know, how the system worked for only the wealthy.
Right, right.
So if you are rich, well, you go to a private hospital where everything is there already. Mm-hmm. So you came in and they said, it's 100,000. You said, yep, here's your check. Let's go on, move. And things move fast. You get the best doctors in town. You get everything quickly done and you're fine. On the other hand, if you're unemployed and poor, you know.
What's the point of even going to the doctor if you know you can't pay?
Then you go there and then you're told, well, sorry, you need to go to the government hospital because we can't take care of you here. Well, then you go on to the government hospital and say, well, here's a list of things to buy. Hmm. Well, you don't have money. You didn't keep money around waiting to fall sick. Hmm. And now you're
because you're trying to do stuff like eat and have a roof over your head and clothes and transportation. I mean, oh my gosh. It's hard to believe we only have 5 minutes left. Dr. Oyurende, is there hope? What can we do to make things better here and, you know, for those countries that, you know, have a cash payment system in order to get health care?
Well, first of all, the world outside America has kind of agreed that health is a human right. Mm-hmm. And So countries are working hard to provide health services free of cost at the point of need. Mm-hmm. So when you are sick, you don't have to bring money out.
Right.
It doesn't mean that it's free totally, because you pay, it's almost like you prepay for your healthcare.
Right, right.
You know, you're earning your income, you're paying some insurance.
Right.
And then when you fall ill, there's enough money in the system to take care of you that doesn't require you to pay at the point of need.
Exactly.
So many countries are doing that. This is like Rwanda are doing very well. They have, I think it's close to 95% insurance coverage.
Awesome.
That covers everybody. And that's a poor country. Mm-hmm. Little or no resources, mm-hmm. but they've managed to run their system very well. That caters for almost anybody.
That's a blessing.
And in the US, the challenge is that people still do not see health as a human right. Mm. And they, unfortunately, the whole system is too commercial.
Mm-hmm. Everything here is too commercial.
Yeah, it's all about economics and finance and how much money do I make out of this sick patient. Mm-hmm. And I think we will have to get to a point where we have to rethink that and say health is a human right. We all must be covered by insurance, and we don't need to be employed to be covered.
Wow.
So exactly. We have to detangle our health coverage from employment.
Dr. Oyerende, you have enlightened me, and I thought I knew some stuff. So I'm pretty sure our audience was blessed. Can you tell everybody the name of your book, how they can get it, and you know, you're a pediatrician here in the United States, how they can get your services if they're in your area?
Well, so that's the book again. Mm-hmm. It's titled Who Should We Let Die? And the subtitle is How Health for All Failed and How Not to Fail Again. And it's available on my website, just my name, drkoyeoyerinde.com. Mm-hmm. And it's also available on Amazon. But I prefer you know, if people want the book, they should go to my website where they can get it cheaper than mm-hmm. on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I'm based in Akron, Ohio. I work for a federally qualified health center. Essentially, it's you could call it a poor people's clinic, mm-hmm. where we treat everybody who comes to the door. Nobody's turned away. We are required to treat everybody, irrespective of their health insurance status. Mm-hmm. And it's called Access Point Community Health Centers.
Praise the Lord. It sounds like that's a better fit for you, given your experience when you were working in Nigeria. I don't think I could do it. My instinct would be to help. But, you know, what do you do if there's no IV? What do you do if there's no blood for the person? I mean, all the questions, you know, we have blood shortages here. So what do you do if this person needs to have surgery and they need blood and you send them to the store to get it? I mean, wow. It just, anyway, I have to stop now. even though I have many, many, many more questions, I have to stop. Thank you again for being here. Again, the name of the book is Who Should We Let Die? Please, people, get a copy of the book so that you will get even more illumination about the healthcare system here in America and abroad, and how we need to be working to make sure that healthcare is seen as a human right, and change, not just in our system, but all over the globe. And don't forget, Dr. Oyerende is also a co-author along with me, in the Love Manifesto Anthology. So purchase that too. You can purchase that on Amazon and Barnes and Noble as well. It is now time for me to get out of the way for the Teens Talk Truth radio show, hosted by my favorite young men on the planet, AJ and Alex Taylor. They discuss hot topics affecting teens in society today. You don't want to miss it, because you're never know what they're going to say. Just keep it locked right here on Studio W Buzz. And don't forget to tune in on Sundays at 5:00 p.m. Central Time for the Boomerang Radio Show, hosted by me, Dr. Reverend Rudolph Demery, Dr. Cecilia Sims, and yes, William A. Brown will be there for his weekly therapy session.
Yep.
I have no doubt that after this interview, Dr. Koye Oyarende is going to be back at some point too. to discuss this book.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I know William well, don't I?
You sure do. Absolutely. And tomorrow, oh boy, I've got a bone to pick tomorrow. It's going to be heavy. I sent you an email. I'm not sure whether you saw it or not. And it is, Luke Combs, covered, Tracy Chapman's, Fast Car album. And I've got a lot to say about that. A lot of controversy and uproar, was posted behind that. So we're going to talk about this, and it's also, and I've got to throw the Washington Post under the bus too while we're at it. So,
what?
Yep, it's going to be hot. It's going to be hot. Yep.
I can tell you already a little feisty about it.
Yep, I'm going to need to turn on the AC. I'm getting warm.
Look, you need to do that anyway. It's hot outside.
Oh, boy. Yep. Anyway, Dr. thoroughly enjoyed it as usual, sir. Okay. Like Ann said, I will be contacting you soon. Okay.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. A great, great program, Ann, as usual. So I'm going to step aside and say, ladies and gentlemen, like Ann said, Teens Talk Troop is coming up. Now, you can check us out 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we say, and I say, and I believe that we have the finest in broadcasting anywhere around the globe. You can reach us Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and also you can download one of our free apps. And Apple, just go to your Apple App Store and download Studio.W. Android is simply Studio W. We're also available on Alexa, Google Play, Apple CarPlay, iTunes, and Spotify. So anyway, that's a lot there. So you have no excuse anywhere around the globe. StudioW.buzz. Go on the website and leave a comment. I'm going to bid both of you a good day. I'm going to step aside. And coming up, Teens Talk Truth right here on Studio W, The Buzz.